Nous allons commencer le séminaire. Katusha, you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Donc, pour cette deuxième séance du séminaire, nous accueillons Katusha Palamidassi. Donc, son exposé sera en anglais. So, I'm going to switch to English right now. So Katusha is directrice de recherche, senior research scientist at INRIA in Saclay, and working at École Polytechnique. And before that, she had positions at Pennsylvania State University, right? And also at University of Genova in Italy. And so when I met her about 20 years ago, she was doing a lot of work on theory of concurrency, process calculi, and that kind of things. It was very interesting. And since then, she's been working also in security, basically several aspects related to probabilistic reasoning, I would say. So one we mentioned last week is a quantitative analysis of information flows, and she's one of the authors of the reference book on this topic. And the another, which she will be talking about today, is about privacy and anonymity of data. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me? Yes. Thank you, Xavier, for the introduction and for the invitation. It's a great honor for me to give a talk at the College of France. So I will speak about the differential privacy today, and this is the summary of what I'm going to present. So first I will give a brief introduction about the problem of privacy and the motivation for probabilistic methods, because differential privacy is based on probabilistic methods. I will speak about the trade-off between privacy and utility of the data, and then I will introduce the two basic models of differential privacy, namely the standard one, called the central model, and the new model that is called the local model. And I will focus on statistical utility, and I will speak about the compositionality of utility. And finally, I will present an hybrid model between the central and the local, which is suitable for distributed settings. So, privacy. Well, I don't think we need to motivate much. So, we live in the information age. As you know, data are collected and used and processed by enormous amounts nowadays, and this is very useful for many applications, especially for machine learning, and they are, as we say, data is the new gold. Their utility in several different applications for societal interest or for economical interest is well documented. But on the other hand, this huge exploitation of data raises concerns for the privacy of the users that have generated this data. So there are often sensitive information in this data, and if they fall in the wrong hands, that can be very dangerous for the original owners of the data. For instance, if an attacker comes to know the habit of an individual and where he lives, he might try to rob him or to stalk him or other things. And even without these criminal actions, the knowledge of sensitive data can have a negative effect for the individual because, for instance, knowing the knowledge of his political tendencies or sexual tendencies might affect negatively, for instance, job applications, and so on. So, privacy is felt as a big problem in large data bases and nowadays also in machine learning. And it actually started to be recognized as a big problem already several decades ago. And originally, the standard solution was based on anonymity, namely de-anonymizing the collection of data, so removing removing the names, essentially. But this is not enough, of course, because there are other attributes that can reveal the identity of an individual when combined, for instance, the address, the age, a social security number, and so on. So these other attributes that might reveal the identity of an individual are called the quasi-identifiers. And one of the most successful approaches until, say, a decade ago was this so-called the key anonymity, which was a method based on essentially making sure that in the collection, every combination of quasi identifier corresponds to at least a K people. So there was a sort of group anonymity. The individual would be confused in a group. Unfortunately, neither anonymization nor K anonymization work very well. And there have been a lot of papers showing attacks on anonymity first and then K anonymity later. And also famous articles on papers like the New York Times. So here I've listed some of these most famous attacks, the Massachusetts medical database attack, the American Online attack, the Netflix prize attack, and the Twitter attack. Let me recall briefly the last two. So these were attacks found by Narayanan Esmatikov about a decade ago. So the Netflix prize dataset was a collection of records showing the movie ratings of the participants. And these two scientists were able to prove that by knowing just a few preferences about the movies and by linking this knowledge with another database that was not anonymized, so the Netflix prize was anonymized, but the other database, which was IMDb, was not anonymized, but by combining, finding the common preferences among records in these two databases, the Netflix prize database could be de-anonymized in a very high percentage, like 95 or 96% of the cases. The other attack that I mentioned was the attack on Twitter. So essentially by linking, the idea here was to represent the social network as a graph where the users are nodes and the links between nodes represent the social exchanges. And by studying the local structure of the graph, these two scientists were able to re-identify, using Flickr as background knowledge, they were able to re-identify 33% of the users with the only 12% error rate. So these attacks were based on databases that where the microdata were published, namely the records once sanitized were public. But the problem is not so much that. The problem is the fact that K-anonymity is a deterministic method. I mean, these databases were anonymized with the K-anonymity, but K-anonymity is a deterministic method, and I will argue that the deterministic methods don't work. The problem is essentially that, I will explain with an example. So let's assume, for the sake of the example, that the microdata are not accessible directly, and that the information contained in the database can only be accessed by querying an interface which ensures K anonymity. So, for instance, this is a very simple example, but just to illustrate the problem. Assume that there is a medical database which contains the correlation between a certain disease and age of an individual. And assume that the sensitive attribute here is the disease. The quasi identifier is the age. And of course, the name is not visible at all. So assume that this database has been made too anonymous. By the way, I forgot to mention how to make a K-anonymous database. This is done by either generalizing or removing some attributes or adding fake records. So anyway, it's been made too anonymous in the sense that, as you can see, every age appears at least two times. So if we ask, for instance, the query, what is the minimum age of a person with the disease, the answer is, in this case, 40. But the attacker will not know if this 40 corresponds to Don or to Carl, assuming that he knows the population and their quasi identifiers. So it will not know if it's Don or Carl that have the disease, or maybe both of them, right? But the important point is that it doesn't know that whether Don has the disease or not. And now, let's assume that there is another database with the same people, which this time contains the correlation between the disease and age, and weight, where weight is now the quasi-identifier. And assume that the query is, what's the minimal weight of a person with the disease? So in this case, the answer will be the maximal weight, sorry. What's the maximal weight of a person with the disease? So the answer will be 100, and this corresponds to Don and Frank. So also notice that this database is also too anonymous. But now, if we combine these two queries, and we obtain the result of the combination of the two answers, 40 and 100, this combination is unique. And so this shows that by simply combining two queries, an attacker is able to identify completely who is the person with the disease, namely Don. And this is a general problem of deterministic approaches. So more in general, and not even restricted to databases, if we have all deterministic methods are based on making sure that the correlation between the observable and the secret is many to one. In a sense that the observable is whatever is will be available to the attacker. The secrets are the possible values of the sensitive attribute. And the K-anonymity ensures that for every observable, there are at least K secrets that correspond to that observable. But now, if we have another system with different observation, maybe also with the same K-anonymity, but the problem is that by combining these two observations, we make an intersection between the two sets to which these observations correspond. And this intersection might result in a singleton, like in this case. So with the simply two observations, K-anonymity might crash completely, might fail completely. Too bad. So what can we do? Well, the solution is to use a probabilistic method. And the idea is very simple, is to introduce some probabilistic noise on the answer so to obfuscate the link with any particular individual. Let's see how it works in this the case of this example. So in the first query, namely what's the minimal age of a person with the disease, say that the curator will give 40 with high probabilities, namely 1/2, and 30 and 50 with the probability 1/4. So there is a sort of cloud distributed on all possible people, all the people in the database, is concentrated on Carl and Don, but all answers are possible. And now, suppose we should do the same thing with the other query. So we give the maximal weight, not minimal. It will be 100 with the probability, high probability, say 4.7, 90 with the probability 2 over 7, say, I mean, some distribution. And so again, all people are possible, although the probability is concentrated on Don and Frank. And when we make the intersect, when we combine these two queries, we will see that the probability accumulates more on Don than on the other, and decreases on the other individuals. But still, none of the other answers is ruled out. So in contrast to the deterministic method, this if we always cover all the domain, this ensures that although the level of privacy decreases, it never fails entirely. So this is basically the idea of differential privacy. Instead of reporting the true answer, so first of all, we don't publish the microdata, we only allow access to the data set by querying the data set, and there is a curator that ensures the additional noise to the answer. And of course, this noise must be chosen carefully because we don't want to destroy the utility completely. In this case, the utility is the utility of, I mean, is the how good of an approximation is the reported answer. So most of the research on privacy and in differential privacy is about this trade-off between privacy and utility. It's about finding the best possible mechanism to give a Pareto optimality between the two. And let me just mention briefly what do we mean by utility. Well, the utility can be of many kinds. It can be quality of service, can be the precision of the statistical analysis, or can be the accuracy in case of machine learning. These are all related because typically when the user gives his data, sometimes he doesn't give, sometimes they are stolen, but assume that he gives his data, he does it in exchange of something, usually some service, right? Then if the data are not precise, the quality of service degrades. The statistical analysis, on the other hand, is what what interests the data collector, right? It usually collects data to make some statistical uses of it. And in machine learning, of course, we use the data for training. So, again, it's very important to find an optimal balance between privacy and accuracy. And in this talk, I will focus in particular on the statistical analysis, just for lack of time. So let me now introduce the differential privacy. So the idea, as I said before, is that the data are collected by a trusted entity called the curator. The access on the database is only allowed by querying the database, and this query goes via the interface of the curator. He receives the query, computes the real answer based on the true data, and then he adds noise according to a mechanism that provides a certain level of noise and a certain level of privacy. So he only reports the noisy answer. And the differential privacy is essentially a property that is expressed by this simple formula there. It says that the mechanism K is differentially private if whenever we have a pair of adjacent data sets, namely data sets that differ only for one record, the difference can be the value of the record or the absence or presence of the record, and for every possible reported answer Y, The probability to give the answer of y on the first data set is almost the same as the probability to give y on the second data set, where this almost the same is quantified by a bound e at the power of epsilon on the ratio between the two probabilities. So this essentially means that an observer, an attacker that tries to infer whether the database is X or X prime, so whether what's the value or the presence absence of this record that makes a difference between X and X prime, will not be able to infer it from the reported answer because of the probability that is X or X prime, the likelihood, sorry, that is X or X prime are almost the same for every Y. So this framework, differential privacy, has become extremely popular. So has wiped out completely all other previous proposal for privacy, and I would say that the main reasons of this success are first of all compositionality, in the sense that if we combine two queries, the reported answers for two queries, and these two queries are sanitized by mechanisms which are E1 and E2 epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 differentially private. The combination of these two is still differentially private, and although the privacy level degrades a bit, degrades linearly in the sense that becomes epsilon 1 plus epsilon 2. I forgot to say that, of course, the larger is epsilon, the less privacy we have. So this means that we have some degradation when you combine the mechanism. The other reason why differential privacy is popular is the independence from side knowledge. Namely, this formula, as you can see, doesn't mention anything about the side knowledge of the adversary. So if a mechanism is differentially private, it's differentially private for all possible adversaries. And I didn't mention it here, but the other reason why it's so popular is because the mechanisms to obtain differential privacy are extremely easy to implement. The typical mechanisms are very easy to implement. And the typical mechanisms, let's say, are the Laplace noise, which is an exponentially decreasing curve, and geometric, that is a sort of discrete approximation of it. There is also subsampling, I didn't mention it here, which is even easier to implement. Namely, if we just sample a subset of the database to compute the correct answer, that gives differential privacy for free, basically. Now, there is a problem with this model, however, which is that the so-called trusted curator might be not trusted at all, in the sense that it could be colluded with the attacker. As you know, there have been scandals about that, like the Cambridge Analytica scandal, because Facebook didn't guarantee the privacy of its of the users. Or even without being colluded, the curator might be not very good at protecting, at ensuring security. So there might be a security breach, and the attacker might be able to access the collection of true data directly. So these are important risks, and for this reason, a model that has become more and more popular recently is the so-called local differential privacy model. It's also the one that has been supported by Google, by high tech companies like Google and Apple. They have gone directly for the local model. So the idea here is that there is no trusted curator. The users, the data owners, sanitize their data themselves by adding some noise. And what is collected is just the noisy records. So the collected data set is already sanitized, and so even if an attacker can see can access it directly, he will only access noisy data. And now, of course, the question is, what's the statistical utility of these records? So unfortunately, the trade-off between privacy and utility is much worse in the local model than in the central model, in the sense that for the same level of privacy, the answer reported by computing them on the noisy data of this local model is usually less accurate, much less accurate, than the reported answer in the central model. However, there are two things to say here. One is that when the number of users is very large, this difference tends to attenuate. The answer tends to be very accurate also in the case of the local model. And this can be done, of course, when the company has a lot of users, like Google and Apple. The other thing, I will speak of that later, is that there is a new technique called the shuffling that allows to obtain a boosting of privacy. And the result of the local model, when enhanced with the shuffling, the local model with shuffling gives a utility privacy trade-off almost as good as that of central privacy. But I'll speak about that later. Before, I wanted to just to give the formula for local differential privacy. So it's essentially the same formula as that of the central model. The only difference is here is that X and X prime, in this case, are not data sets, but single records. So X and X prime are two values in the domain, and the mechanism should ensure that the reported answer, that the probability to get the same reported answer on the two values is almost the same. An example of this would be the randomized response protocol. So assume that you wanted to make a pool of to collect information about certain question, and assume that is an embarrassing question. For instance, have you ever cheated on your partner? Okay, so you want to know what's the percentage of the population that cheats on his partner or her partner. Of course, you cannot expect that people will answer truthfully because it's quite embarrassing to admit that you have cheated. But you offer to execute the following protocol. You throw a coin, and of course the result of the coin you keep it for yourself. If the coin is head, you answer the truth. If the coin is tail, you throw the coin again, toss the coin again, and you answer true, yes or no, depending on whether it is head or tail. Okay, so in this way, you will report the true answer with 3/4, if the coin is not biased, you will report the true answer with 3/4 probability, 3/4 probability, and the wrong answer with 1/4, of course. And the important point is that whoever gets the answer, even if it is a yes, you want to know for sure that you have cheated on your partner, so that your privacy is somehow preserved. This can be generalized. This protocol is actually a very old protocol that was proposed 60 years ago. But has been recently rediscovered in the context of local differential privacy, and I would say is the main mechanism for local differential privacy. It is generalized to the case of k elements in the domain. So the previous one was a binary answer, but assume that the answer can range in a domain of size k. And then the mechanism is simply to report the true answer with e at the power of epsilon more likelihood than reporting any other answer. All the other answers are reported uniformly. And then, so there is this C, which is simply a, this C here is simply a normalization constant. Oops, sorry. And the nice thing about this mechanism is, in general, the property of local differential privacy is that is the same, like central differential privacy, it is compositional and is independent on the side knowledge of the adversary. The main problem is statistical utility is good if the number of data collected is huge. The quality of service is very bad, but I will not speak of the quality of service. So I wanted also to mention our approach to local differential privacy, that we call deep privacy. This is in a sense a generalization of both the local and central model. The formula is what you see there, essentially the difference with respect to X and X prime here are either databases or single data. The difference with respect to previous formulas is that instead of just being bound by A at the power of epsilon, we put in the exponents also the distance between X and X prime. So we assume that X and X prime live in a metric domain. And this formula generalizes the other two models because if X and X prime are databases, we take D as the Hamming distance, and we can prove easily that it corresponds then exactly to the central model. And for local differential privacy, D would, for the formula I gave before for local differential privacy, this would D would be just the discrete distance, namely zero if X and X prime are equal and one otherwise. And also the nice properties of differential privacy are preserved. Compositionality and independence from the user knowledge, from the attacker knowledge. And like a local differential privacy, it can be applied at the user side. We have used this especially for location privacy. So because of what this formula means, essentially, it protects the accuracy, in the metric sense, of the data. So it can be used in applications like location privacy when we are usually interested in hiding the exact location. For instance, we want to hide whether we are in Notre Dame or in Rupigal, but we don't want to hide the fact that we are in Paris, okay? So in this case, reporting an approximate location is usually okay. And also for utility, is useful when the utility of the data don't depend on the precise point, but it's good for the zone. Like for instance, if you want to find point of interest around you. So we call this notion geo-indistinguishability, and we have implemented it using planar Laplace essentially. Namely a Laplace that extends on a Cartesian plane. And we have also an application, and let me show it works. Essentially, suppose that we are in this point blue in Paris, I think it's Café Le Deux Magots. And suppose that our area of interest is this circle around it. Now we report the position, after we apply the mechanism, the reported position might be even outside, might be different from the true position, of course, but it might be even outside the area of interest. But this is not a big problem because we simply ask, for instance, suppose that we want to look for area, for points of interest around us, so we ask for a larger area, and then Once we get the point of interest, we our say tablets or whatever whatever device we use, we filter the one that are really in the true area of interest. So now statistical utility. I have to check. Still have time until 12:15, right? Thank you. So statistical utility will essentially consider the basic statistical problem, which is the estimation of the original distribution of the data. So the distribution from which the true data are sampled. So remember how the local differential privacy works. Essentially, all true data are sanitized individually, and we collect the noisy data. Assume that the true data are generated by a distribution P. Now, we by sanitizing this data, by applying the noisy mechanism, we get a different distribution, of course. And let's call this distribution Q. The distribution is an empirical distribution based on counting the frequencies of the data. Now, what we want to do, essentially, is when we collect a lot of data and we look at the mechanism as a matrix, like the one we have seen for a randomized response, we want essentially to find an estimation mechanism that is able to revert the process as much as possible, namely to denoise the distribution, the frequencies. And hopefully the estimation that we get after this the application of this mechanism will be close to the true distribution. Now, one such mechanism is the so-called iterative Bayesian update. And this works, as I will explain later, for every privacy mechanism under the assumption that the matrix is invertible. For KRR in particular, we have also another method that is called the matrix inversion. Let me show how it works. So, so essentially we consider the true distribution as a variable, and we collect the frequencies after the application of the mechanism, and we write the system corresponding to this to the multiplication of the input, the true distribution, by the matrix. So if Q is the result of the distribution, is the empirical distribution, essentially the problem consists in finding out what is the variable, the set of variables, so the original distribution P. And this can be done by inverting the matrix. So for instance, suppose that in the randomized response we collect 60% of answer yes and 40% of answer no. By applying, so clearly the matrix, the mechanism makes the distribution, the empirical distribution, more uniform than the original distribution, right? So in order to denoise this distribution, we apply the matrix inversion. In this case, we would get, by solving the system, that the likely true pool should be 70% of yes and 30% of no. Now, one problem is that this does not always give a distribution, this method, because of course there is some probability that, for instance, we collect many more yes than we should. Because of the randomization, many more yes come out. So for instance, if we get 80% of yes and 20% of no, and we try to solve the system, and we will get that the most likely probability is that the yes are 110%, which is of course not possible. So in order to obtain a distribution, we can use two methods. Either we set to zero all the negative elements and we renormalize, or a better method is to project the solution of the system on the simplex, namely take the distribution in the distribution that is closest in the Euclidean sense to the solution of the system. And both of these methods, but especially the second one, give a good estimate when they're used with KRR, but not with other mechanisms, in particular not with deep privacy. So for deep privacy, we have to use the iterative Bayesian update. So this is one of my favorite methods. It's based on a very solid statistical framework, namely that of maximization expectation, and is guaranteed to produce a maximum likelihood estimator of the true distribution. And furthermore, if the matrix is invertible, then this maximum likelihood estimator is unique, and the result of the iterative Bayesian update converges to the true probability by increasing the number of samples. The way it works is an iterative method that starts with, we need to take a fully supported distribution to start with. For instance, the uniform distribution is perfectly fine. And then we apply, using the previous distribution as a prior, we apply this transformation here, that essentially has a score the Bayes theorem. And by repeating these steps, we converge towards the fixed point, because we can show that this transformation is a contraction in the metric sense, and therefore it has a unique fixed point. And this fixed point converges to the true distribution when the number of samples increases, tends to infinity. Now, how do these two methods for local differential privacy compare? Well, we have studied the trade-off between deep privacy with the Laplace mechanism and local differential privacy with the KRR mechanisms in terms of relation between privacy, trade-off between privacy and utility. Of course, although they both have this parameter epsilon, the epsilon does not have the same meaning in the two mechanisms. So we have to tune the mechanisms so that they satisfy the same privacy level in the region of interest. Once this tuning is done, we have compared their utility based on experiments, essentially, on geographical data sets called the Govalla, which reports true check-ins in various cities in the world. So, for instance, here is the map of an area in San Francisco, and in this figure here, you can see the density of the check-ins. So we have now anonymized them using the Laplace mechanism, And this reports the result of the sanitization, namely the collection of data that to which we have added the noise. And now I'm going to show how the IBU works. As I said, the iterative Bayesian update works. As you know, it's an iterative method. So what I'm going to show here is an animated GIF in which each photogram represents one step of the method. So by repeating this transformation, we reconstruct pretty well, I would say, although not completely accurately, not completely precisely, the original distribution. In contrast, the KRR mechanism, since the database is only 10,000 check-ins, so it's not very large, doesn't work very well. So we have attuned the mechanism with the same level of privacy, and we do the same thing as before. Namely, we try to reconstruct the original distribution, but as you can see, it's very far off from, it's very inaccurate, at least in this case. So I would conclude that the privacy, for at least for this specific application, gives a better trade-off between privacy and utility, and statistical utility, but also, of course, quality of service. Okay, here are some evaluation, the evaluation, the comparison between the two reported in, as a box plots. So we have used the for evaluating the distance between the true distribution and the estimated ones, the Kantorovich, the Monge, Wasserstein Kantorovich distance, also known as Earth mover distance, which takes into account the ground distance. And as you can see, the planar Laplace and the planar geometric are the lower, are this curve here, so are very, very accurate compared to the KRR mechanism, which is this one. And we did the same evaluation for Paris, experiment for Paris, and we got more or less the same result. The ratio is like from 1 to 7. Okay, so and now I would like to speak about the compositionality of utility, not privacy. So namely, one nice thing about the local mechanisms, both the KRR with the inversion matrix method and the privacy with, the Laplace with the iterative Bayesian update, both of them have a compositionality property in the sense that if we take different databases and we sanitize them with local differential privacy, and then we put all this noisy data together and we apply the matrix inversion in the case of KRR, we get exactly the same estimation accuracy as if we had first put together all the data, then sanitized, and then applied the inversion method. And this is true even if each database is sanitized with a different level of differential privacy, or KRR. Of course, for the combined result, we would have a convex combination of this level of privacy. So this is very nice. And we have the same result also for actually any combination of mechanisms. And when we reconstruct the the original distribution, estimated the original distribution using the iterative Bayesian update. Actually, is a generalization of the iterative Bayesian update, because the iterative Bayesian update works only on one database. And also in this case, we obtain exactly the same estimation, so full compositionality of utility. And now this gave us the idea of suggesting a hybrid mechanism for privacy in a distributed setting. So distributed setting is when you have many databases owned by different entities which are willing to cooperate so to obtain a better utility by putting together their collections, but they don't want to reveal they don't want to reveal the true data. They all want to protect them with possibly different mechanisms. Now, the hybrid approach would be simply, instead of using central differential privacy and then combining, using local differential privacy and then estimate the original distribution like we do in for local differential privacy. So the advantages are, okay, so first of all, let me say that it's not exactly the local differential privacy formalism, because here the notion of attacker is the one of central privacy. Namely, we assume that somehow these data are not sanitized data, are not reported individually, but as a multiset, okay? And this is possible by using a technique called the shuffling. In fact, for KRR, this model has been investigated a lot, especially by Ball, but also by some people at INRIA, like Aureliane Bellet. And it's very popular nowadays. The important thing is that by having a weaker notion of attacker, the privacy is boosted, and in this way, the trade-off between privacy and utility is as good, basically as good as that of the central model. So let me explain better what we mean by privacy in the local model. In the local model, the attacker can see the obfuscated version of each record. In the hybrid model, we assume that there is an infrastructure that is able to somehow mix these data together so that the attacker doesn't see the individual record, noisy record, but only the collection of noisy records. And this can be achieved, I mean, the technique of shuffling is based on well-investigated methods like the mix architecture, where you have several mixing devices that shuffle the data. And so since there are many of them, even if some are corrupted or colluded with the attacker, it's just just the fact that one is honest ensures perfect shuffling. So what's about the utility in the hybrid model? So the utility is essentially that of local differential privacy. Namely, we can apply the typical mechanism like a matrix inversion for KRR or the generalized iterative Bayesian update for any other mechanism. How to compare that with the central model? Well, in the central model, what we would basically do to achieve the same goal is to compute the true distribution and then add noise to each bin. I mean, in the discrete case, distribution would be represented as an histogram, and we essentially apply noise to each bin of the histogram according to some mechanism, like, for instance, the Laplace, but on each individual bin. Now, the point is that, as I said before, if we, for the same level of privacy, the two, And the estimation method in the case of the central model would be just to take the noisy histogram, because it's the most likely, because the noise, like Laplace, is white noise, so it tends to erase itself. So the most likely distribution is the one that is reported. And the two processes gives similar result. In particular, it's a little bit better for the central mechanism when the level of noise added by each individual data set is the same, but it's much better for the local model, the hybrid model, when the mechanisms are different, when the level of privacy are different. Another big advantage of hybrid versus the central mechanism is the compositionality. Both the generalized iterative Bayesian update is compositional for any local mechanism, and the INVA plus, KRR plus INVA is compositional. And if, as I said before, we could do the same thing with the standard DP, but try to compose different results. But when the mechanisms have a different level of privacy, we have observed experimentally, we are not sure why theoretically, but from the experiment it's clear that the estimation of accuracy is much lower than with the local mechanisms. And concerning the comparison between deprivacy and KRR, well, there are advantages and disadvantages. The iterative Bayesian update is more general because it can be applied to any combination of privacy mechanisms. And if the mechanisms are invertible, we are assured that the method will converge to the most likely estimator and to the true distribution. And we have observed that deprivacy with the iterative Bayesian update gives a better estimation, better trade-off between accuracy and privacy, especially when we measure with respect to the Earth mover distance. On the other hand, KRR with the inversion matrix is more efficient because the inversion of the matrix in the case of the KRR mechanism is very simple. Essentially, it's a diagonal matrix. Sorry, not a diagonal. It's a matrix that has higher probability, higher values on the diagonal and uniform values everywhere else. And this can be inverted very efficiently. Okay, and this concludes my talk. And I am 1 minute late. Thank you very much for your attention.